Welcome to A New Lens with Common Good Capital, where we talk with investors, RIAs, fund managers, and philanthropists about their experiences within different impact investing themes, as well as exploring the power of stewardship and capital. I'm your host, Jeff Schaefer, CEO of Common Good Capital, and I'm here with Tim Seneff, the president of the National Christian Foundation Orlando, a nonprofit established to serve and encourage local philanthropists to grow as faithful stewards, and who over the last 7 years, this is significant, have helped over 600 families on their path to giving over $200 million to charity. Anxious to hear more about that. Full transparency, Tim and I met in college nearly 30 years ago. He is a dear friend, and so we will do the best we can to stay away from any inside jokes. Tim, welcome, and thanks for taking the time with us here today.
Thanks for having me. Excited about being a part of this.
All right, so we got a series of questions that we'll go through, and let's start out with this. Obviously, I know you, but let's the listeners know a little bit more about you. Give us a little background of yourself, kind of where you grew up, maybe where you went to school, and the high level of your career.
Sure. So grew up Florida boy. I was at high school here locally in the Orlando area and went away to college undergrad in the Chicago area, and that's where we met, which was crazy. That was when we were 18 years old, and really enjoyed school, played basketball in college and was a history major, but really always had an interest in business. Grew up in the house of an entrepreneur, so I was always around business, and so ended up going on and doing an MBA. And then my wife and I had an opportunity to study overseas, really to integrate my undergrad degree, history, Bible, with business. So we looked at the theology of work and the theology of money when we were in the UK, which was very insightful and helpful to the work that I've done. And then since college and since school, really had two careers, one in the financial services space with CNO Financial Group. And then the last, as you mentioned, 7 or 8 years now working to run a nonprofit. So really two different purviews, right? One for profit and then one now a nonprofit. So I feel like I've had two careers in some ways.
Yes. And I know your career quite well. And he won't say it, but he's been very successful and on many different levels. But even the numbers we just read, when you think about 600 families giving $200 million to charity, I mean, that's
huge. It's a joy. You know, essentially, we get to be in the middle of capital flowing from families to their favorite charities. And the idea that we get to be in the middle of those conversations and help families think that through and think through how to be tax efficient, it's like, doesn't feel like a job. It's really fun. I joke with people that I feel like I'm an investment banker for philanthropy, right? You're just kind of brokering how to get dollars to their favorite charities. So it's been fun.
All right. So give us a perspective of how you would describe yourself today at the current age that you are, current context of your life, as it relates to the journey that you're on.
Well, some context point is that I had a health scare in my late 30s, which I think really helped me see that life was short. And I'm certain that my shift from for-profit, you know, being on airplanes every week to being in a nonprofit space was shaped by that. So, I mean, I think of 25 years now working, we're in a stage now where we're launching, you know, 4 children off to college in the next 5 years. And having a career in the financial services space for over a decade and now nearly a decade in the nonprofit space, as mentioned, I feel like I'm closing down or in the middle of a second career, and I may have, you know, a third or a fourth, you know, knowing that I'm in my mid-40s. So I think growing up, I felt like perhaps the world was measured by money, and that was the scorecard by which things were measured. And I think I've really tried to shift that to be more around, how can I give back? How can I have significance versus financial success, if that makes sense? So I, you know, have just really enjoyed the transition in the last few years and excited about the days ahead.
Is there any other stories that you think shaped this transition? Obviously, you mentioned the surgery, which I remember.
Yeah, I think that was the big one. I would say in our giving journey, we were tithing 10%, and that felt fun, but it also felt like a mortgage payment to some degree. And I would look back 10 years ago and realize that there wasn't a lot of joy in our giving. And as I've gotten older, I'm realizing, wow, there is such a joy, not only in giving of your money, but your time and your talent, right? That there's a process there. And I think a lot of people miss out on that. They just get so busy, they don't ever have a chance to give of their time, talent, treasure. So that's something Michelle and I have really enjoyed over the last few years, is to grow into that. So that's been a big change for us as well.
So you're involved in a lot of things, and I know that you're always dreaming about different ideas or ways to impact the world. Practically today, how are you trying to change the world?
Well, first you think about home, and you know, I want to have emotionally, physically, relationally healthy children. We have 5 kids, 18 down to age 8. So I think as a father, as a husband, that's probably point number one. I feel like that does change the world if we raise leaders that are global citizens, understand the issues, have a sense of serving others, giving back, that kind of thing. I think the other one is, you know, I've thought a lot about this idea of knowing thyself. The better we can know ourselves and our skills and gifts, the better I think we can really plug in to the needs that are out there and in a way that really makes a difference. Like where if you can get your talent and you can get passion and have those points intersect, you really have people in their zones of influence. You know, when I think about just what I love and enjoy, a couple things that come to mind. I like the idea of building, leading, unifying teams and families to steward redemptive ideas, potential, and initiatives. That just gets me excited. I like this idea of like, don't do anything unless it's Nobel Prize worthy. Like how do we go out and really get after something? So one thing that has shifted back to the giving story for me and our journey has been the bottom right part of a spreadsheet. Usually if you're doing finances, has your net worth. Mm-hmm. And so we've started to flip that around to say, all right, what could be our cumulative giving for lifetime? What does that bottom right number look like? And that started to shift our paradigm a bit to think through how do we know our gifts and skills, plug those into the communities we live in, be channels of blessing to others through the raising of healthy kids, and then orient our financial life towards giving versus accumulation.
You've grown up in a unique situation. Father is an entrepreneur and has a very successful financial services business, which you were involved in a number of different capacities. When did you realize the power of capital?
Yeah, it's a great question. Two stories. One, I recall I got my securities licenses while I was in college.
I remember you studying for that, by the way.
Yeah. So I was, 20 years old or so, and I would start to meet with families who were interested in investing in real estate through the company. And I remember making some commissions in those early days, and I just thought, wow, the opportunity to have capital. You know, I was making $6 an hour, you know, in doing yard work, and then I could make a couple grand, you know, with a sale like that. So I remember that's how I put money together to buy Michelle's wedding ring because we got married, you know, a month out of college. So that hit me. The other part of a capital that strikes me is that just uniquely the way the world's built, and especially America, the businesses are an amazing way to provide employment, unleash creativity, inculcate a culture that can espouse good and bad, right? But if you do it right, you can espouse the good, the true, and the beautiful. And you're enabling through employment you're giving opportunities for folks to earn, to self-actualize, to collaborate. And so I just think not only is there power in capital, but there's the power of having a business that has capital to really bless not only your investors and stakeholders, but your employees.
Let me go down that path a little bit. Being in the impact investing space, if I were to generalize over the last 5 years, if I were to talk about investing in something outside the U.S. to create jobs, people got it. When you talk about creating jobs in the U.S., it doesn't feel as impactful. Do you think this current environment is influencing that notion?
Sure. Good question. Yeah, I think in light of how Corona has impacted all of us the last 6 or 7 months, we're certainly seeing there's a group of workers, whether it be through technology, the work that they do, that they can work from home, and that affords them opportunities that other workers don't have. And so there is this idea that there's haves and have-nots in this Corona economy, let's put it that way. And so I do think you look at unemployment in the nation, and then you look at unemployment in the state of Florida, and Florida is higher because we very much are sensitive to a lot of wage earners who are out at the parks and in the entertainment space. And so we have to figure out ways to engage them for us to be viable state economy. But I do think that resonates more now. And we're not out of the woods, right? We've got a few more years where I think it's going to be difficult for folks to have us to get back to full employment.
Well, I love what you had said earlier. And that's why I brought up the question, because I do think the way you articulated just the power of capital and a job, I think we've taken for granted. And I look in my world, as you know, I've done a fair amount of work with men and women in prison. I see it firsthand. You take their job away from them in the prison system and they're devastated. I mean, we're made to work. And so I appreciate your comments because I think we often forget how important a job and entrepreneurship is, apart from just capital that it can provide.
Yeah, and I would add too that I, you know, the number one reason people leave a job is because of the who they report to, their supervisor. If you have a supervisor who develops you well, cares about you, and that who you want to work with, that changes your life, right? When you come home at night, the way you earn, the way you learn, there's a lot of things that really propels you towards a different trajectory.
So we've talked about the power of capital. You've given us some ideas of how you view this and some stories. I don't know if it's on the opposite side, but maybe opposite side of how we have historically thought about it. You have this idea of stewardship. What does stewardship mean to you and how do you try to live that out today?
I think of stewardship as treating capital like it's not my own. And I think you have a different, you know, when you rent a car, you just have a sense of, well, it's a rental, right? Like, but if you treat that car like it's your own, it's a different mentality. And so how do we approach capital, whether it's invested capital, whether it be our home, a car, how do we treat all that as if it's not our own, that it's given to us and that we're stewards? So that makes me think of broad level stewardship. I think of it personally. I've done the StrengthFinders test and I'm a maximizer. That's one of my top five. And I think of it for me, like stewardship is at the end of life, looking back and saying, I couldn't have done any more. Like I maximized it. And frankly, that could mean just having zero left in the bank. Like we timed it out perfect, right? We gave to our favorite causes and we were able to pass down dollars to, you know, whether it be family and friends in a way that we zeroed it out. You know, that would be a cool, this, I like this idea of sharing versus showing. Like how do you, with stewardship, you can have nice things if you're constantly sharing. I think that can be a blessing. If it's just there to show, then that's different, right? But I like Todd Harper's comment around, he's never met an unhappy giver. And I just think that's true. Folks that have open-handed mentality towards their life, sharing. You see this a lot in hospitality, right? Like incredibly hospitable people are usually people you want to be around. And so that open-handedness is a quality I think we should think about, not just in the context of giving, but also in the context of sharing.
Yeah, and actually, I wasn't going to bring this up, but your idea of sharing triggered this for me. I mean, one of your gifts is gathering of friends, and you do that through sharing of access to different, in this case, different places. And so I think even when it comes to this idea of stewardship, it's not just giving, but it's all the way from the way you coordinate and get everybody to gather at a certain spot. And so I think it's just an interesting thing to expand stewardship from just capital. And I even look at the way you all have shared your home. You've opened your home to people to live with you at different periods of time. And so I think that's another great example of a stewardship of your home. And yet obviously it's blessed you and your family tremendously.
I do think there in the COVID economy, it's one of the sad things that's happened is we can't convene and gather as much. And I think we're all realizing as humans how important that is to us. And so hopefully as vaccines are created and we get to the other side, those things come back more strongly than ever before, that we do need that connection. We do need that convening to do life together, do community together.
Okay, my last question for you, and it doesn't need to be like a pinnacle answer or the number one thing, but if you could make one dream come true for your life, what would that be? And if you need to put in another one, that's fine too.
I can have two dreams?
You can have two dreams.
Thanks. You know, I think as we've built out this ecosystem the last 7 or 8 years here in town with NCF, and we've worked a lot with Generous Giving and other partners, the idea of creating, it, we call Orlando the city beautiful, but the idea of thinking through how could we make Orlando the city generous, that animates me. That's a big idea. That's a 100-year problem to solve. And it would take a lot, right? But like, how do we start to flip around the way we think of the spreadsheet I mentioned? The bottom right is instead of net worth, it's giving. How do we start to think about taking practices that perhaps we don't even realize that are exploitive and move them to ethical, even to redemptive? Like, how do we move down that scale? How do we create a community There's this rule of life community that's been starting up here in town around how we use our time, think through decisions, how we think about money, power, our imagination, community, and friends. That kind of thickness within relationships and community, I think, changes a town. So I saw a sign I was running a couple of days ago, and it just said country over party. Instead of having, a red or blue state sign, it was just, and I thought, what if there was a sign city over party, right? Like, what matters in Orlando is around generosity, around community, like making it a better place, not around, blue or red or any of that, but let's just lock arms and make this place better. So being a longtime Florida guy, and being in a family from here, I think that's a dream for me, that we would just be redemptive with one another. And it would just, people would visit here and say, there's something different around Orlando. And I want to use my influence to make the city a better place to live, not just for my family, but for everyone.
So I lied. I'm going to ask you one more question.
Oh, off the script. Okay.
It's not unlike me to throw in more questions. So you clearly have a heart around generosity, which I think most people immediately think of philanthropy, which clearly fits. But how do you think about impact investing? Mm-hmm. How does it fit within that framework of generosity?
Yeah, I think increasingly, in the last 5 years especially, there's a huge spike in interest around that. Because historically, you would have dollars and you would say, well, I want to give to ABC charity. And increasingly, a lot of times those ABC charities, whatever they may be, they need capital, but they could return that capital. And they're doing projects that have triple bottom lines, right? It's not just financial, it's social, it's spiritual. And so there's especially if you think through the generational changes, the millennials have a very altruistic mindset. So how can they be engaged in something that isn't just purely profit and where there is triple bottom line? So I think not only from an investment standpoint, but also just the mentality generationally, it'll continue to just grow as we go into the future. And I think with COVID, it's presented a lot of shops are running like startups right now because everybody's trying to reinvent the wheel and pivot accordingly. And I think impact investing will be a place that will sit squarely in that new, as we go into the future, that new kind of trajectory. So,
yeah, it's interesting. You mentioned the word innovation, I think I heard you say. And I will tell you, that's been one of the interesting things that I did not think that I would find when I went to the impact space. You think it's more about heart, maybe a little bit light on the investing side. But in fact, what I've seen is very creative, innovative structures, investment ideas. And obviously, we could go into a bunch of them. And so what I get excited about this whole idea of impact investing is it's this intentionality of how do you solve problems in a more sustainable, creative way? And frankly, it unleashes creativity that I think most people at these big banks would be shocked to see.
Well, I would just, one other thought, I remember going to SOCAP conference in San Francisco in 2012, 8 years ago, and it was like the wild, wild west. I mean, and so you had deals that were tons of impact, but the returns were not there financially, or the returns were great financially and the impact wasn't, right? And so over 8 years, it's really started to become a more legitimate space where you see both really happening. And there's track record now. So I think it's become a more stable space, and I think it'll just continue to grow. And I'm excited about what you're doing with Common Good to propel that forward.
Well, we very much appreciate your insight, your knowledge, and your willingness to share your story with us, Tim. Obviously, I know you extremely well. But I'm even reminded, even sitting down in this context, which is what, 25 minutes, and you and I know each other extremely well, deliberately asking these questions has even refined the way that I have viewed you. And for those of you who are listening, Tim and I have known each other for 30 years. We know ins and outs. So it's just a great reminder of sitting across the table or if you have to do it on a Zoom and asking real questions that matter is just a great reminder to me of the need to sit and listen and to have communication. And grateful for your friendship. We're talking normally today as if we knew we were going to be here 30 years prior to our original meeting. It's been an absolute journey. And one of the things that I value deeply in your friendship is this desire to stay connected. And so for all those who are listening, I would encourage you,
stay connected to family members, stay connected to friends. That in itself can have a huge impact in the world, not only personally, but the world we live in. So,
No, I appreciate the time. I think there is a power in substantive conversations and connection, especially in this COVID situation. And so the more we can have these kind of conversations, the better.
Also, like, these conversations are so great. I know your heart, I know my heart. We're not perfect, but we're both trying to actually not only have conversations, but go do stuff. And so one of the things I would challenge us all is, it's easy to sit back and criticize the political environment or whatever you want to gripe on, but get your feet out there and go do stuff. Put your money into stuff. Risk some capital in the affordable housing space. That's how we're going to move this forward. So anyways, don't forget to subscribe to A New Lens with Common Good Capital on your podcast app of choice. Please rate and review us on iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. This will help new investors find the show and hopefully put them on the path to more fulfilling portfolios within the impact investing space. I'm Jeff Schaefer. We'll see you next time.
This podcast is a production of Common Good Capital and does not constitute an offer or a solicitation of an offer. Such offer would only be made through a private placement memorandum. Prospective investors in private placement securities should be aware that making an investment is speculative and involves a high degree of risk, including the risk of losing all or a portion of an investment. Investments of this nature are illiquid and subject to substantial restrictions upon transferability.